Hi, Internet. My name is John Matos.
And this is Melissa Matos.
Welcome to Unboxing Story, where we unpack fiction without the friction. I'm interpreting that now as a science thing.
Oh.
But, no. Every week, I kind of have a different way of explaining our stuff. But this, because we just watched a mysterious sci-fi film.
Yes.
I'll let you decide. we watched a movie called The Signal that I had seen a few years ago when I was bored scrolling through HBO Go, and I was glad I watched it because apparently this was a film that was picked up at Sundance in the early 2010s, came out 2014, and it's a kind of abduction piece that was done by new director William Eubank, and it stars the incomparable Laurie Fishies.
You should say his real name so people know what that means.
Apparently he went by Larry when he starred in what's that movie? Tag it. Who's the weird pasty guy that has the couch that talks and the...
What?
You didn't... You're not a 90s kid. I need to look this up for myself. But
Pee-wee
went,
Herman?
Yes.
He was a Pee-wee Herman?
He was the cowboy. I'm
so confused.
Well, I think back when I was watching this movie, I was just interested in looking through his filmography, and that's when I found out that was one of his first roles, and that he used to go by Larry.
Okay.
Lawrence Fishburne, star of Blackish and
CSI.
The Matrix.
He was in CSI for a bit.
Yeah.
Yes, The Matrix, among other wonderful things.
He's
a very good
the
fellow.
Antagonist. So the alien abduction that we're referring to starts off very early on in the movie. It's a group of kids that are on their way to college. The main character, played by Brenton Thwaites, who I happen to like. It doesn't seem like maybe Hollywood likes him.
Which is a shame, because he's very good.
Yeah, but yeah, he was in...
He is now Dystopia Boy.
Yeah.
That is what we are calling him.
This is kind of dystopia adjacent, because, you know, you see people driving around in the desert, and you obviously, automatically, you're like, Mad Max! They're driving out to California. We're going to get to it. We need to set this up because it's a very strange movie.
It is a very strange movie.
They're just driving out to college, and Brenton Thwaites' character is disabled. He has just been diagnosed with something that's going to take his legs. You have flashbacks that show that he was a runner. So this is... if this were not already a big deal for him, it's very specifically, you know, dramatical irony, intense of horror for him. But he's being kind of butthurt about it, and he's like, you know, basically, let's say, telling his girlfriend who's on his trip with him, like, listen, I want to hold you back. You know, you go out there and sow your wild oats and stuff. Like, this is kind of weird, like, awkward thing where he's like not trying to say I want to break up, but it's very obvious that he's like going through something real major and doesn't want anybody nearby. Just want to push everybody. So yeah, his girlfriend, played by the dying girl from Me and Earl. that's another indie movie that you may or may not have heard of. So Jonah is the main character. Nick is his friend. They're both hyper.
Nick was the main character. Jonah was the guy with the glasses.
Oh. They did. They made the mistake of listing the friend first. Nick is the main character. Jonah's his nerdy friend. They're both nerdy.
Yes, they're all nerdy because she got into Caltech, so they're all nerdy.
And they're driving along. They have this kind of episode where he freaks out, but then the main thrust of it is they get picked up by something. They're like wandering around this building because there was, ta-da, the signal.
Yes. Someone hacked their servers at MIT, and they have been traced down who this person is, who has been taunting them the whole time.
Yeah, he's like, "Are you agitated?" He texts them, and he somehow got a picture of their vehicle. So Haley's all freaked out. So she's interested in getting more, because she seems like she wants to beat the person up. But they're all kind of like, you know, being crazy kids trying to figure out what this thing is. And you just see a bunch of like lights, and somebody gets sucked up in something. And then they wake up, and Nick is sitting across from Larry Fishy's in a hazmat suit. Yes. And he's claiming, you know, "You're contaminated, so we can't, you know, get anywhere near you." But he's subjecting him to all these different tests. So before we get into spoilers, some things that we enjoyed about this movie. You start.
So it was very unusual, and I wasn't sure at first whether it was just going to be a hacker thing, because my brother did not warn me about this movie at all. So I wasn't sure. It's going to be...
the pestilence that is this movie. He did not warn you.
It's going to be a hacker thriller. And then I was like, oh no, it's an alien abduction. And then I was like, no, it's...
What's funny to me?
Okay, what is going on?
Let me let people in on this running joke that we have. Whenever I see you watching something, I'll say, "Oh, you don't like horror at all."
No, yeah,
because there are kind of things recently in the sci-fi fantasy genre that are couched as, "Oh, this is like fun because there's magic or there's a cop team that's trying to figure out what the thing is." And so there's this kind of veneer of civilization.
Yes, over top of
civility.
The actual just straight up horror that is going on.
Right. So
this was definitely a horror movie.
Right. We'll so it's funny that seems like you enjoyed the movie.
Oh yeah.
But whenever you start talking about something that is like sci-fi horror, you're like, and then this happened.
Well, no, it was just weird because it felt like it was genre hopping. But it was supposed to be doing that, too, because it was a very Hitchcocky kind of way that they did it. It wasn't just like, oh, we're going to turn this into a different kind of movie now. It's just, oh, you thought it was this. Really, it's been this the whole time.
Right.
I liked the plot. I think the plot made sense. Mm. It was confusing at first. Mm. We're sure what was going on and held you in suspense. But when they finally revealed what's going on, you're like, oh, okay. Mm. I liked how each of them had kind of a moment to show, well, maybe not the girl. I wasn't terribly happy that the girl was kind of motivation. She wasn't really her own character. Mm. She was just there to motivate the guy. But
I think it's come so far, so like full circle to me that I like, and every now and again, it makes me happy to have a damsel like that. We've seen so many things where they give a girl random moments. I would make the case that there is one in this one where she, like those moments that make people cheer, like, oh, the girl does something. So they have a moment in this one where there's a possibility, after they escape this kind of facility, that, it gets kidnapped by this random trucker guy, and he's, What I think is, it's funny to me because it seems almost more of an indictment of him that, like, this chick isn't gonna do anything to him.
Right.
So, like, she finds his gun and they actually get free from the thing. I think more or less what bothered me about that point was that they flirt with the idea that they did something to her in the facility.
Yeah, and they don't tell you what.
And they don't.
At all.
So, I
like,
think
the
that's
other
just
two,
more.
You get to see what they did. Her, I think, like I said, to me, it read more like she was infected like the others were infected and it wasn't taking, and she was just going to lose her mind eventually.
Right. I just think that it's a weird reductionist film studies point that any plot point that's a mistake that has to do with a girl, it's because the guy that wrote it doesn't know how to write women. That doesn't always indicate.
I liked her,
right,
characterization,
but that's what I'm
at the
saying,
beginning. Like the conversation she had with the guy
uh-huh.
at the beginning was very agented. Like, she was there with them for a reason. She was the reason they were taking the trip. She had agency at the beginning. It's just once they hit the facility part, she was only there to motivate the guy to get out. Like, that was it.
Right. But I think that's the... I just think it's a weird it's a weird discussion that I think is one-sided. So I'm pushing back I'm pushing against a straw man, so you have to forgive me because I know that's not necessarily you. But I think that it usually offends me if they actively make a woman seem weak.
Right.
As opposed to, I think what happened maybe was the acting on her part. Maybe she was supposed to be acting more disoriented than she did. And, like, as far as the script goes, like, there's something that's wrong with her that she's a little bit more lethargic. And that I think there are certain moments where she says things that are supposed to lead you to believe that she's disabled somehow mentally. Before, she was aware because she wasn't messed with somehow mentally. But they don't give you a plot reason.
Right.
So as far as, like, an explanation. Whereas with the other two guys, they're enhanced, we'll say, and so in a pretty obvious ways.
Yeah.
And so you're more like, okay, they had a plan for these two characters, and it's very obvious what these people did to them versus her. It's not as obvious. But I just think that the discussion of agency is strange to me because there are different things that a woman will do passively that don't necessarily, to me, say that they didn't do anything. It's just, I think that there are people that, because you're watching something that is a mixture of action and, like, people take breaks and, like, you know, try to relax, that if the girl is not a fighter with the guys, that somehow that means that they don't have agency.
Right. Well, no, I wasn't expecting your, okay, let me back up then. So, I feel like this had different sections, right?
Uh-huh.
So, in the first, I guess the first act, maybe?
Uh-huh.
The first act is them having their new age drama,
mm-hmm.
not new adult drama,
uh-huh.
on the way to yes. drop her off at
new age. They take acid
at college.
Uh-huh.
So, that I thought was written very well. I think her part in that was written very well, where she's just like, so you're too afraid to, like, long-distance date me for a year? Like, we're in this relationship. We should keep this relationship. I don't want to drop this relationship, but you're the one being weird about, like I liked her attitude in that whole part.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole, like, yeah, let's go get this guy that's tormenting us because he's freaking me out because he's stalking us now.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought she was very well written, and all the characters, I think, were really well written in that part. In the second act, it's a lot harder because you're only going from Nick's point of view.
Right.
And they're all isolated now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're stuck. He's stuck in the facility. Mm-hmm. I really liked the facility part. I liked the way they were messing around with the psychology of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was very clear to me. Like, I told you from the beginning that Lawrence Fishburne was not trying to help him. Lawrence
mm-hmm.
Fishburne was, like, diagnosing him, almost.
Mm-hmm.
It was more like, are you okay mentally? Are you, you know, adjusting to what we did to you?
Mm-hmm.
Not, are we going to, you know, help you figure out this alien abduction thing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was not what was going on. I figured that out pretty early on
mm-hmm.
because of how they were testing.
Right.
And I liked the way the whole facility felt. I liked the weird light color changing thing.
Mm-hmm.
I liked how most of the people moved around like zombies, and like half the times when he was breaking out, nobody tried to stop him. Like,
right.
It was really weird.
Yeah.
And it felt creepy, and it was really good. Well
mm-hmm.
done stuff. And like the random rooms that they were hosing down. The one part that I was confused by, we already wrote
yes.
down on the thing, was like, cow? Question mark?
Uh-huh. So, yeah, I think what I could do to agree with you is that I would have liked the payoff for the cow thing. And because what happens in the movie is that it shows Lawrence Fishburne's character in his hazmat suit in, like, a viewfinder room. He's looking in on this room where there's cow. But then you hear something that they're releasing. They push a button and there's like a door that opens in the back of the room.
Very Sarlacc feeling kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think maybe what would have
happened. Or no,
whatever
that thing
happened.
Is Jawa has in his basement. That's whatever that thing is. I don't remember if that's the name of it. Anyway.
Okay, yeah. And I think that what might have happened is that they might have planned something that didn't work. And as far as the budget goes, because it seems to me like growl, growl, focus back on
Darkness.
Lawrence Fishburne.
So then something comes flying at the window.
Right. But then I think they made a mistake by showing another shot of the cow.
Yeah.
With its head just going past out of sight, out of the corner of the screen.
Because it didn't even look like something was taking it out of sight. It just was looking like it was backing up. And I'm
I
did something eat a cow?
They kind of deflated that part of it.
Or no?
Thankfully, it didn't seem like they were, it's not a monster movie, so no. that wasn't enough to distract
But that's
me
another
from.
Thing that was confusing. Was it supposed to be a monster? Because something escapes. Like, the alarm goes off after that. Something escaped. You never see the thing that escaped.
The way that I would describe it is that it's almost to me like they took the cabin in the woods setup of, like, we're just going to introduce a bunch of interesting ideas.
Unless, do you think it was supposed to be Jonah? And he was supposed to beat the cow up, and he didn't. He just threw something at the window and ran?
Huh.
And they just never give you enough context clues to figure that out?
Well, there was a noise that the thing made, and...
Because he did a lot of roaring...
So let me continue my metaphor.
Anyway, sorry.
The cabin in the woods thing to me is like, I like movies that rather than give you the answers to everything. And it's kind of something that I set up on my little notepad here. that like, I like mysteries that don't have cliched answers, but I feel like I'm writing a doctorate on J.J. Abrams in my mind, because he's one of the only creators that I've seen talk about his method of storytelling in a TED talk. So I think maybe that's part of it, because he describes this mystery box. And to me, I think it's interesting because it's maybe the only bit of like mystery theory, I guess, that I've heard where like, the mystery is more interesting than the answer. So I guess you could say like the whole thing of Lost and what is the island and Rey's parents, he set that up in the first Force Awakens. So people have been kind of trying to chip away at like, is that really as true as it sounds on the face of it? So to me, there are a lot of creators that are, they get very self-involved and don't listen to the perspective of others that, like, I feel like if they had just gotten, like, edited a little bit more, somebody could have told them this mystery is not as interesting as you think it is, right? But I feel like for the purposes of the film, I liked how it seemed like they were in this kind of cabin in the woods situation where they set up this thing of, like, there's this facility. They're obviously doing experiments because later we see that all these different people around the facility are crazy. And so my headcanon was they might be doing all kinds of stuff.
Right.
And it was ambitious enough that they were setting up different things like that and not giving just, you know, feeding you answers, that it didn't bother me very much. Like, I think during the moment, like I said, that shot kind of bothered me because it seemed like they were trying to, that, it was confusing enough that it jarred me. And I was like, well, what, why are they showing the thing again if it got eaten, or, you know. So that was, I think, a bad handling of that. But I think that's one of the biggest things about the movie is that I think maybe it was shot quickly enough that there were some things that they didn't get a second pass at. And maybe two of those are cow and the girl making it so that it's very,
because
we need to make it obvious why this intelligent woman who is this guy's girlfriend, who seems very competent, is not doing anything during the third act of the movie. Everybody kind of has a different beat,
right,
to do something heroic, and that's something we'll get into, like you were saying later, is
even
the heroic arc of
even to the point of the third act, which is all chase. Like, they managed to get out and are now being chased around the desert and unable to escape. At the end of the chase, when they get caught again, she's just flown off in a helicopter. Like, they don't kill her, which is what I was expecting, because by this point, Lawrence Fishburne has killed several of the other just random crazy people that are out there. Mm. So I was expecting him to just shoot her because she's losing her mind, if that was the case. No, they just pick her up and take her away in a helicopter. I'm like, are you doing something to her or not? Can you maybe tell, like, just give us a hint. Give us a hint of something, because by this point you have learned that what they have done to the two boys is integrate alien technology onto their bodies. The boy who's Nick, who was losing the ability in his legs anyway, was given mechanical legs, and then his friend was given mechanical hands. So, but they never show anything changed on the girl at all, except that she is lethargic and losing her mind a bit. And they show that the augmentations given to them are really cool. Like, they give them superpowers, basically.
Right.
Like, the kid can now run really, really fast, and the other kid can punch to the point of, like, you know, causing earthquake kind of things.
Right.
Anyway, so, I mean, like, it makes sense, like, the whole arc of, Nick's arc, anyway, of going from this kid who is upset because he's losing his ability to walk and run because he was a runner beforehand anyway, who then is brilliant enough to get out of this facility with his friends, or try and save his friends, and then in the third act realize what they've done to him and what is going on, is a pretty cool arc. But I think, and I think the thing with Jonah, where he's trying to be a hacker and can't because he can't type anymore with those hands, was an interesting twist to that. Because really, technically, to Nick, I think what Lawrence Fishburne's excitement was in keeping this kid was he had already been a runner. They replaced something that was failing on him, and so his body, like, accepted it better than other people's would have. And so he was just, like, ready for this to happen, as opposed to the other people that they were trying to do this to, who either lost their minds or, like, his friend, well, his friend was kind of losing his mind, too. Like, their minds were rejecting this. Like, because sometimes your body does that. It will reject even other human parts that you put in yourself. It'll just, like, no, this is not me.
Right.
Get rid of this.
Right.
So I think that whole overall picture was really cool. There was just a couple unanswered things that I'm like, why did you put that scene in there if you're not going to tell us what in the world's going on?
Right. Yeah, I think my verdict would be this is a good movie. It's good, not great. And it's actually, I'm kind of disappointed in the few faults that I have with it because of how much I like the potential that I see in it.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot more, I think, ambitious than most random one-off sci-fi things. As we're starting to see, I think, a resurgence of sci-fi with stuff on different streaming platforms, and so there is kind of a and I guess, like, with some of the things coming out of, like, a Sundance, like, they're seeming to soften to the idea of more cinematic on a lowercase c, like, sci-fi that you can have, like, because I think for a while there, like, I was excited that there were a bunch of, like, indie horror movies. So you got stuff like Get Out that was actually doing something, like, interesting that was not just a, you know, let's throw out a horror movie at, like, a Paranormal Activity that's just, you know, just kind of the scares are all that's there to think about.
Right.
It's usually not something that, as pretentious as it sounds, that grabs me as much as, you know, interesting ideas. So I think with this one, like, there were interesting story elements to it, and there are things about the fact that it whether it comes from it being an indie film or it comes from, you know, different choices that, you know, that are deliberate choices you or I just don't agree with, that keep it from going to that extra level of, you know, being up for an Academy Award. And so I really hope that this filmmaker continues to work in the space that he's doing. I noticed in doing a little bit of research that he's working on a version of the Count of Monte Cristo. It's a favorite of Melissa.
Yes.
We were watching it the other day.
Best revenge story ever.
And I don't know if that's a film version or if it's a series or whatever, but it's called The Count. That's interesting. And it looks like he's also doing another kind of, like, sci-fi adventure thing. And I think that's the interesting thing about this, what we'll go into it in the next, after the break, is kind of how this is very hopeful, I guess. Like, it's interesting because it is unforgiving with different dramatic moments and with different, like, violence in it. But there's this sense of, like there's this kind of punk rock aspect to it. So it's like different characters just like being, just continuing to fight, that I think makes it kind of memorable for that. So yeah, we'll talk about that after the break. Melissa was making fun of one of the actors.
That's not making fun of, those guys are cool. I want to play the jug.
This is
true. I want to play the jug in a bluegrass band.
Not necessarily
the actor that played Jonah.
Indicting of.
His name is Bo Knapp.
Yes.
And I said that sounds like the guy playing the jug in a bluegrass band.
But
I,
we all respect jug players in
that's
this
right.
In this podcast.
Yes, we do.
Okay. And Olivia Cooke is the name of the girl that was in Meryl and Dying Girl. She plays Haley in this. That's one thing we could start off by saying before we get into the nitty gritty of
the
genre stuff.
Amazing.
So I think. It was really cool that they got Lawrence Fishburne to be this weird person. You don't know what he is because it was interesting that right away you were thinking like, okay, they're somewhat showing their cards with this place. Like the way that this guy is behaving
is not
normal.
Human.
So like we were kind of spitballing, me pretending like I hadn't seen it before. And her, you know, for the first time watching it, thinking like, you know, is this somebody that, like, went rogue? Like he actually, I thought it was cool that as a nerd, he kind of, like, theorized to him and was, like, accusing him.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think that's kind of what they're playing around with a little bit in the Annihilation, the Southern Reach trilogy, starts with Annihilation, that, like, there are some science projects that just continue to go on past their usefulness.
Yeah.
And so he was kind of, as somebody that was in the STEM field, Nick's character is like, you're just one of these dinosaur projects that's like wasting away and, you know.
That's still around. Nobody's
and
really
he referenced something
anymore.
Called the first era of big science or something.
Yeah.
So it
did. The facility didn't look like it had been built recently.
Mm.
Like it looked like something from like the 70s or 80s when that became like, oh, we're all going to start these big, giant research projects, and we're going to have pristine-looking white hallways that make you think that this is an insane asylum. Like, it was not very psychologically friendly.
Right.
So, but it wasn't intended to be either, so, you know, that was the point. But it was very much gave you the feeling of, like, guys with big glasses on giant computers.
So, what's funny about his performance is, at first, you're just like, is he a sociopath?
Or is he an alien? Like, is he, what's wrong with this guy? You
should
know there's something wrong with him. And he was very good at making that.
Yeah. I really like Olivia Cooke. I think she's one of those like rising stars that's picking really good projects. I referenced one that I kind of fell in love with her for. That's called Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl, and she has cancer in it. And so it's one of those like kind of slice of life. And there was kind of a trend of like sick kid stories from there for a little bit, both in fiction and on screen. And it was kind of part of that bump. But I thought that one was really good, and I thought she was good in it. And like we've kind of sang the praises of Brenton Thwaites as being one of these kind of leading men that's on the cusp of something big, I think.
Yeah, because The Giver was amazing. If you haven't seen that, you'll totally need to see that.
Megan really doesn't like it.
Read the book. What?
She must have had. It must have been one of those cases of like you read the book and you have certain things
in your mind. And it's,
but yeah,
I thought they did a really good job. Because that's a hard book to interpret into film. Like, it's a really hard book to interpret into film.
Right.
And the choice of actually keeping it black and white and things like that were interesting. Were like, they needed to do that. It probably turned a lot of people off because it was such a weird story to try and portray. But.
Right. I thought Bo Knapp, Jug or No, was was really good. I thought he did a good job of portraying kind of like a nerdy, kind of like socially awkward person. But like, you believed that him and Brenton Thwaites' character were friends.
Yes.
I
also appreciated that they didn't make it that he was bitter about being the third wheel, because they tend to do that a lot.
That was pretty awesome.
When you're the friend of a couple and the guy is just in the back being bitter, and he wasn't. He was very happy that they were together, that they were taking her.
Right.
Well, he kept calling them Caltech traitors or something like that, because they were leaving MIT. But anyway, he was still obviously very much a good friend to the both of them, and I appreciated that.
We had kind of referenced that the William Eubanks visuals were really good, but what I appreciated,
I liked the two extras that they had show up playing crazy people.
Oh,
that woman was terrifying.
Yeah, she deserves a shout out.
Yes, she does. Her and the guy in the truck, they were both very good.
Yeah, even the people that they picked for the random people that as Nick and Haley and Jonah are, you know, going across what looks kind of like New Mexico. They're not really sure where they are.
Somewhere in the middle of nowhere, Southwest America.
They run across this very Christian lady who picks them up, and you're like, okay, that's nice. You know, they don't have to deal with that crazy trucker guy. And then she starts saying things that are like, it's one of my favorite writer things, because you can just go crazy with word salad.
Yeah.
And so she was just saying things that made absolutely no sense.
Like, can you hear the little horns? That's how you know that he's watching over us. You can hear the angel's little horns. The angel's little horns, something like that. It was just bizarre.
It was weird because it's one of those things that was interesting about making her hyper-religious, because you're like, this person could just be like one of those, like, they're delusional, but not
that's
enough
sweet.
To be dangerous.
Harmful. Yeah, they're just a little crazy.
That's but
okay.
It starts to get to that place of like, we really need to go away from you, because I don't know if we'll be safe if we stay.
So then
in
there's
dark.
Another thing that I'm
Lin
Shaye. Sure.
She's a pretty prominent.
Okay.
I've seen her as a.
So now I'm also curious.
Character actors
and spitballing person. If these were actual humans that were losing their mind because they were trying to integrate them into the technology, or if they were just programmed robots,
mm-hmm.
right? That were, their programming was screwed up somehow. Like,
I don't know. It's interesting
because like, she looked like she was on repeat there. Like there was something misfiring. Like when Lawrence Fishburne finally catches her and is asking her questions, she looks like she's stuck on a...
I would side on the latter, because I think maybe is playing into that idea, but more, I would have been more interested if that, because you have her set up that way, it would have been interesting if they started to do that with Olivia Cooke's character, really, because they had already set up, okay, she is...
There's something wrong with her, but she wasn't going as far wrong as the other people were. That's what was confusing me.
And so that might have been a little bit more... Like, I don't know if that... Maybe they made them refilm stuff, and that was like a studio note that,
maybe.
Like, she can be debilitated, but we can't have her be this because test audiences are freaking out. Who knows? But I was thinking would be more along... It's kind of my headcanon that it's more that way, because if it is... just robots, I don't know if he would have shot them.
That's true. And he does have that speech to the truck driver guy about how stubborn we are.
Right.
And such a will to live. So
right.
My question is then, so, okay, this is just a couple contradictions. I hate to do this because I really did enjoy watching the movie. It's just contradictions that are popping up in my head. So, by the end, we know that this is a fake constructed environment on a space station somewhere. They're not actually in Nevada. They're, like, on some projected version of Nevada on a space station.
Right.
And there's all these humans living in there, some of which are in this facility and getting alien tech done to them, some of which think they're living in towns in the middle of nowhere in Nevada. But if, like, why then do you have to lie to them? Why are they telling them that the people in the facility are contagious? Like, I could see you saying these people escaped and they're dangerous, but why are they telling everybody they're contagious?
But
if it is actually that the other people living outside are already sick with something, like they're already losing their minds and crazy and have nosebleeds of something black, that's, I don't know what the heck that was about, but
it's very odd for me to try to defend aliens. because I don't know if it says something about me that my mind immediately is like, of course this makes sense. But anyway, it's my understanding, like, and it's kind of a weird circular thing. I have a larger theory that I think maybe is the meta point that could or could not affect what the actual plot is, because it doesn't usually distract me if I don't really know all the answers to things. But I think the one reason why that specific point didn't distract me was that I was just thinking, if they are abducting humans and experimenting with them in this thing, that if these are psychological in nature, they might want to experiment with all of these people believing these things are fiction.
Oh, okay.
Because it's like that control variant
thing,
right? So like they might want to have some people have certain knowledge and some people not know anything at all. And I think maybe what could have done better to support that if you wanted more, you know, visual, like, hints at things, that they could have hinted that these people were either A, escape people that managed to make a living in this place. Because that's one of the confusing filmic choices that they don't delve into that might bother you, is that, for all intents and purposes, this looks like Area 51.
Right.
And it's one of the things that they hint at early on, so that the twist at the end kind of has some bite to it. Because the code on Jonah's arm says, and code on all their arms,
adds up to
you know, that. So that idea is that they're pulling you along in that way, but there, I think, could have been hints that, not just based on how they're behaving, but that, like, for example, they give you that this guy had a memory of his family.
Right.
But there's not necessarily anything to make you think, okay, even this, the place where this guy lives, the place where he ran off to, the trucker that we mentioned earlier, there's not necessarily a hint that he escaped this facility or that this place that he's living is where they're testing on him.
Right.
It could have been nice to have that as a thing.
He seems to know to find him there. So, like, is that just where they let them live? Like, I don't know. That part wasn't very clear. I almost feel like, I wish this had been, like, the first two episodes of a series. Because there's so much more to explore that I would like to know what they're
planning. And I think that's something that actually excites me about delving back into classic sci-fi. Because people that have listened to this podcast know that I'm a fan of Ray Bradbury. I've read iRobot. I enjoyed some of the stories, some of them not as much. But I'm starting to get into Daniel Green's YouTube channel. He's a fantasy fan, but is also a big fan of classic sci-fi. And it reminded me that kind of like those were part of the roots of my reading, that I liked a lot of Ray Bradbury and some of Asimov and stuff. And I like asking those big questions in sci-fi. And seeing people be ambitious with the story. And so with this, like, I think I'm so excited about how ambitious it's being that I don't mind some of those little things that don't connect. But I think that the ones that get to the legendary status of something like Blade Runner or Alien,
they
manage to create a good visual and emotional experience while also putting you in a world that you can go back to again and again and again and notice
and
different details.
So
that's the thing, is that it's I really like how there is this kind of superhero origin story within a horror movie, because you're getting this thing of and as somebody who's disabled, it's especially emotionally cathartic to see somebody who has a disability who's getting some kind of treatment that he didn't want for it. I think it's a fun metaphor, because it's like when you get different things, like when you get a wheelchair, you get a cane. It's not that you want to be the kid with the wheelchair or the kid with the cane, but it's cool to see, like, okay, I have this thing, I'm gonna do what I do best. Like, there's this idea of, even when you don't get the answer to whether he escapes this weird, you know, alien planet or wherever they are, And that it's it to me when I first watched it, the what I left with was this feeling of like he is oppressed by this new world that he's going to enter as a somebody with a disability. But the fact that it is the thing that you end on is him fighting it. There's this interesting, very macho thing of like, well, screw you, disability. I'm going to fight you kind of thing. And so it's like I was kind of saying, it's very like punk rock in the sense that like he has a really cool moment. His friend, like you were saying, has this cathartic thing where he's like typing and he can't do anything. And then he's just like, well, screw it. I'm just going to
punch stuff.
Punch the ground. Yeah. For first
thing, I'm almost wondering if it was the point of the whole simulation because he was the first one to actually integrate properly to the technology. If this was like they're pushing him to integrate into this technology and take ownership of what they gave him. Right? Because the last scene is him running like speed of sound.
Right.
Fast away from these guys,
mm-hmm.
and finally, you know, fully utilizing this technology that they gave him.
Right.
So it's almost like how I Am Mother was, where the whole thing was just basically to reinforce what the aliens or whatever they are wanted.
Right.
Or what? Actually, both cases, it's robots, right? Like they're both our robot overlords.
Uh-huh.
We're doing this to push the human to do what they wanted.
Right. Yeah, and I think that as a big, such a big idea, I respect it on that level of like, it's a cool kind of classic sci-fi idea. But then I think what I failed to mention was that I feel like a novel is the perfect vehicle for those types of big ideas. And because I was kind of hit really hard with the Lost craze and this idea that like, this was a very unique epoch in like artistic history, but like having seen that and that being what I kind of like stayed in that era of like, oh, there's just going to be another Lost every year. And then that not being a thing, after going to Confluence, I was like, oh, like there's a bunch of sci-fi that I've missed out on in fiction. It would be fun to kind of dive into that and see whether there are gems that, you know, I can find that have those ideas and have them thoroughly, rigorously tested over chapter, and that aren't that same kind of thing of like, fitting into a genre because there's certain things that work on TV or certain things that work in film.
Right.
Because I think it is very difficult, like, to this film's credit, to create a whole world within an hour and a half and have there not be
holes.
Different little holes. And so I feel like it did a bang-up job for what it was, for such an ambitious thing. Like you're saying, it's very interesting that Damon, Lawrence Fishburne's character, like, the best way to explain these people to you are that they're, like, the astronauts that steal
E.T. It's very much that vibe of the end of E.T. when it's all the creepy dudes in suits and you have no idea what's going on because you're experiencing this whole thing through the eyes of a 12-year-old kid and you're like, ah, this is all scary.
Because I think what sells it for me is that there's this creepy idea of like, when he finally reveals himself to be an alien, it's almost like, oh, I'm like a Jeff Goldblum type scientist who is like totally happy that I have a human specimen to work on. And it sets it up as, like, this is the aliens' utopia, and they're just living in this thing. While at the same time, you get this really strong protagonist who's, like, willing to... that's why I kind of push back against the female character not doing much, because it's this kind of weird thing where, like, I certainly appreciate things like, for example, like Ant-Man and the Wasp. I was nowhere on the side of the misogynists who were saying this is crappy because a female is kicking butt. It was cool to me that they were both get to be partners, and that part of the whole point of the story is that he needs to learn to be as competent as she is, and he's not threatened by having a competent
partner.
Love interest and partner and stuff. And so I think that like every now and again when you have a story that is more one-sided like that, I keep trying to fight against the, like I was saying, a straw man version of a feminist argument to show that, like, there are certain things that for guys to watch are very cathartic when you are able to save the girl. And so, like I was saying, it's nowhere, and I don't fault you for thinking that, because, like, it seems like in the first part, she has such a good head on her shoulders in terms of, I know what I want, and you're kind of an asshole for, like, being like this to me, treating me like this is my fault. And she has that strength of character that doesn't seem to be shown in the kind of metaphorical, you know, screw you life thing of that the two guys get those moments. And so it would have been nice to have her have some kind of moment that echoes, you know, the initial strength of her character in the beginning.
Right. Even just like you said, giving a reason for her disorientation, like showing that she was going mad or something that debilitated her,
I
other
think,
than just like,
I think,
they've had me drugged for a while. Like, you know, like,
yeah, have her do something. Cause I think that I think something that kind of failed was I never really doubted that she cared about him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could understand that as this bullheadish guy, he's thinking that she's not going to love me because of this thing. And so you're getting this in kind of like passive aggressive things that he's doing. But when she just, like, at the very end says, I love you, it's like, well, I knew that.
Yeah.
I know he doesn't know that. But it wasn't as cathartic because it's more one of those things of, like, the drama is only coming from the fact that he's fighting back in some way. But it doesn't really have anything to do with her.
Right.
Whereas in the beginning, it seemed like the conflict was, like, he needs to prove to her that he's willing to, you know, continue to fight for this relationship and not just give it up because he's going through something.
I mean, if they wanted to carry on the feeling of the beginning, where it's him having to let her go and be somewhere else and be secure in their relationship while that's happening, they could have done it instead where she integrated better into the technology than he did, and have him have to let her go off with the aliens and do whatever needed to be done and trust that she was going to come back to him. That would have been my weird twist on things. But that's okay, because like I said, I still enjoyed the movie a lot. I thought it was cute that she gave him back. At the beginning, you think she throws away something that he had given to her as a gift, this necklace that she had. But she didn't. She kept it, and she gives it back to him at the end.
Right.
To show that, like, she was still, you know, in the relationship.
Yeah, I think that that it's weird with love, because it's like, I feel like it's been a rote criticism to always say, like, love conquers all means nothing. Because I think there are certainly stories that have had, whether it's romantic or not, something where somebody says something emotional and it's not, like, doesn't make the movie bad. But I think, like I was saying, it didn't seem like the conflict was she's going to give up on him.
Right. He was giving up on himself.
Right. So it's weird because it's one of those things where, like for example, it's really cathartic to me at the end of Walk the Line that even though Johnny Cash is, like, drugging himself to death, that June goes that extra mile to help him out, gets him off the stuff, and believes in him, kind of thing. But I think that it's such a tricky thing when you're working with something like this that isn't as... It's not a drama, not a traditional drama. So when you have an emotional thing like that, just having a symbol like the necklace that she's giving back to him, it doesn't always hold up under the weight of the emotional stuff that it sets up initially. So I feel like that's where that kind of comes from in sci-fi fantasy things, when you have, like, you know, just believe with your heart and you're waiting for something a little bit more dramatic, then that can kind of fall a little bit flat. But I'm excited for more William Eubanks stuff.
Yeah, I think... So here's my final take on this.
Yes.
Right? If I had to sum it up.
Order in the court.
This is a director on the level of Hitchcock, because that guy had some serious Hitchcock-level horror stuff going on in there.
Yeah.
That was beautiful.
Yes.
And the cinematography was amazing. So this is a Hitchcock-level director who had a very ambitious idea for a sci-fi story that maybe didn't get completely, you know, wrapped up as well as it could have, but it came out very well. So I'm eager to see what he does with future story ideas that he can give us Hitchcock level horror with really awesome sci-fi concepts. Like, if that seems to be what he's doing, going for, I am all kinds of down for that. I'm even okay if he makes The Count of Monte Cristo like some weird steampunk nonsense, because I think this guy could do some cool stuff with that.
So yeah, because I think that like there's almost like fantasy elements on the level of like something like a Shyamalan movie, where it's a very specific vision of a fantastical idea. It's more in that horror bent, and there are different idiosyncratic filmic choices that he's making that are different than what a more generic director would do. But with that kind of science bent to it, that it's almost more like the first act is more like an Aaron Sorkin thing, where it's like that nerdy, and it's following these very intelligent people and thinking like, so there's one scene where the guy gets crackers every day. And so Nick, takes the crackers and crushes them with his wheelchair, and he uses the crumbs to put them on the dial to dial out the building, and so sees where it's pressed all the time for the people to get out. And so it's such a cool like having a character that smart,
when he memorized the hallways that they take him through,
right,
to get from his room to the exam room, like he just sat there and recited it backwards. This is exactly, because there's a clock that's broken, he's like, this is exactly where in this building this clock is gone.
right
there, that one. And
and even that's kind of reminiscent of like a mouse in a maze,
right?
It's that kind of like, you are the science experiment, so you get people that are smart because they can code and they're, you know, hackers and stuff, but then they're like being made into science experiments. And it's cool without like having those things like you would get in like a sitcom where it's like, no, you have to write something about mice in mazes, and then like that's how you make that connection. I think there's a lot of those things that like the movie trusts you to kind of think about.
Yeah, which I like. I mean, I like that he left a lot to you to figure out, but it was a little too much.
I agree.
So.
It's one of those things that it's bordering on annoying, some of the things that it doesn't give you. But it's that kind of infuriating that is my bread and butter. I think I'm going to look for some of these for breaking genre. I think our last breaking genre episode was The Drive.
Yeah.
And that I think was similarly like, there's some of these things that like are cool, and some of them that are like, I don't know if I want to watch this movie again. Because it's the tension and the violence is like, you know, that kind of thing, like wigs me out to experience more than once. Watch more Larry Fishy's movies.
Always. Don't rent. Just not Event Horizon.
Yeah. So I guess
unless you want to be terrified for.
I'll say don't watch Pee Wee's Playhouse, and you could say don't watch Event Horizon.
Yes.
Which is
even
funny.
Even though it was Lawrence Fishburne and Sam Neill, who are two of my favorites, I cannot handle that movie.
Yeah, that's one of those ones that maybe what we'll do eventually is I'll watch it for the first time without you.
Won't
subject you to it again.
Thank you.
And then we can talk, because that's one of those ones that, like, you, it's, like, in your, like, unconscious mind, still, like, there's a red alert that fires over it.
Yes, it does.
And that could be a good, like, breaking genre thing in the future. Next episode is going to be Billie Eilish and Halsey. We're going to talk about fairy tale retellings, because they both have crown
really,
metaphors
songs.
And
you
big
should see
songs.
Me in a crown. The other is Castle, I believe is the title.
Yeah.
For the Halsey song.
So we're going to talk about Snow White and the Huntsman, which was kind of like a it's another kind of like genre cooking thing.
Yes.
So it's a different recipe of fantasy. We're going to talk a little bit about the visual aesthetics of these two artists, and especially considering that Billie Eilish is like invading pop music
everything.
Right now.
Well, she's got a great voice and cool songs. Okay.
Yes. Don't argue with me.
She still
argue
scares
with
me.
Them.
No, I'm not
Tell
arguing
them.
With them. They're awesome. It's all good.
I pointed to the microphone.
And also, we're very excited because maybe, I heard a rumor that, like, Halsey and 21 Pilots are going to get together and do some stuff.
You worried me that you said maybe, and so I thought you were going to make a Carly Rae Jepsen reference.
Oh, gosh, no.
I'm very happy.
I would not do that to you.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.